had an opportunity to take in the big three.
Well, I have had a chance to attend one event, and I was very impressed with the production, the promotion of it, and all of the marketing. Ice Cube and his staff have done a wonderful job. On the other hand, I think it's up for the players and the product to improve.
Rick Bucher. Bucher.
I've watched it. I have not attended. I've watched it. I've seen plenty of promotion on social media. I've talked to Al Harrington and Steven Jackson, Kenyon Martin about their participation. Seems to be, like, it has the chance to be the master, the golf version of the master circuit.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher. Bucher.
I'd like to welcome a special guest here to the BJ and Bucher podcast, Mr. Gerald Brown, Harlem's finest, New York City extraordinaire. Gerald, we'd like to welcome you.
BJ, thank you, Shane. I appreciate that. I don't know. I'm speechless. I didn't expect that type of introduction. I thought you were going to throw in the old little Sirius XM and everything like that. Shameless plug.
Go ahead, Gerald. Tell us where you're at, where we can find you on the show.
Saturdays right now, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. So, you know, definitely check that out.
Well, good. You know, normally when Gerald and I are talking, we always get into somehow, one way or another, into that hip-hop. Please check out our latest, you know, we had a little conversation with one of the greats, one of the legends, Big Daddy Kane. Please check that out. I think it'd be definitely worth your time. But most importantly, he gives us his top five of all time, not just top five today, of all time. And definitely be worth your time. But today, Gerald, we want to talk about franchise players in the NBA. In your estimation, Gerald, what makes a franchise player?
Well, BJ, you know, I'm really torn behind that because I think that this title, all of a sudden, it seems like the origin of that title would basically come from a marketing standpoint in terms of a person that you can identify perhaps as the best player on the team. The marketing department will get behind that individual. You would see that person be the face of the franchise. It's a title and phrase we always hear. So I always equated it with the whole aspect of a marketing. But I mean, nowadays there's so many different titles that's associated with it. But I always felt that it was a guy that you can be able to, as a franchise and an organization, market that individual because probably going to be an all-star. He's going to be out in the community. He is the face of your franchise. So that's where I think of the title franchise player.
Sure, there's a lot of talented players. We throw that term around loosely now, franchise. You know, he'll probably be an all-star. As an ex-player in this league, Jordan, I always thought it came down to one thing. Does he affect the bottom line, which is winning? Does he affect the top line? Does he put people in the seats? Now, Gerald, what is a franchise player? Because we didn't talk about what. I didn't hear winning in your explanation. You know, if you're a franchise player, should you at least be able to get us out of the first round? Now, there's been a lot of talented players.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, when you speak of that, I think that, first of all, we got to make sure we differentiate team success from individual success. As a franchise player, your expectations might not be the overall and realistic expectations of that franchise. Let's look at Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is undeniable a franchise player. They haven't been able to get to the first round. They haven't been able to get out of the first round, nor have they been able to get to the playoffs on a consistent basis. You look at Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard, would you consider him a franchise player? I mean, you affect the bottom line, but he's not a guy that you can really market. I don't think that – I mean, how comfortable you think – and you would know this better than any of us. How comfortable you think teams and advertisers would feel in terms of saying, okay, Kawhi Leonard in the San Antonio Spurs, as opposed to Tim Duncan in the San Antonio Spurs? If you think about the San Antonio Spurs, they're pretty much epitomized what we think of in terms of team. So sometimes it's very hard, and I think that we have done this as fans. Individuals always constitute success, team success with individual success. I mean, I'm in New York City, and I remember a guy like Bernard King, as well as Patrick Ewing.
Saint Bernard? I saw Saint Bernard. Saint Bernard gave me a 55-piece one night.
Bad boy. He had the Brooklyn scowl on his face like this. Hey, Brooklyn Scout.
He gave us a 55 piece.
Oh,
he was just coming off. He was just coming off an injury. No, true story. He was coming off an injury. He was with Washington.
Washington
Bullets.
And he was an all-star that year.
He was an all-star. And I mean, that turnaround jump shot. I remember I can remember the scouting report. Double team Bernard King when he catches it on the box. And that ball was through the basket before the double team could even come. That's how fast he was doing. I mean, he was an unbelievable player. But so you want to break down the difference between team success from the individual's talent.
Well, I mean, you say your definition of a franchise player. I think if anything, and I think we've had this conversation several times prior in terms of it goes back to the main thing is, you know, how do you define a superstar? Is a superstar a guy because he's on a commercial? Blake Griffin is a superstar. But if you look at the individual success of Blake Griffin and team success, it's probably two different situations. So I think right now we see it in the NBA, and it's a great job by the league as a whole in terms of marketing its players. And you know, we're talking about this top 25 list they always come out
right,
with.
Right.
It's a great way to drum up some interest, still a little thunder away from the NFL and college football, along with the other sports. But I really believe that deep down, you know, if you think about it, what is a superstar? You know, in terms of superstars, everybody's great now. And not everybody's good. We talked about this before, BJ. Giannis Antetokounmpo. People say, oh, my God, he's going to be a superstar. He's a superstar. He only played in a five-game series, a seven-game series, and maybe he had three games, you know, in that series, in that first round. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. The body of work, we need to see more. But now we're so interested in labeling a guy a superstar before we see more in terms of saying, okay, you know what? I've seen enough.
You know? Gerald, how many superstars do we actually have in today's NBA? I mean, true superstars.
Maybe two, three.
Who you got?
I would say, let me take that back. I probably would say four max. And that would be LeBron, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden.
If you were building a franchise right now, assuming that you're going to take one of those four players you just named, who would you take first?
LeBron.
Why?
I think LeBron affects both sides of the court. I think, if anything, he's a guy that basically, you know what, he can guard all five positions. He's a guy that's a facilitator. His basketball IQ is very, very high. Now, don't get me wrong. There's no disrespect to any of the guys like Curry and all those guys. But to really just see exactly what he's been able to do and how, in terms of how he's able to have other players as opposed to making them better, because I don't like that term. I don't think a player makes another player better. I think he makes their job easier. That's the term, in terms of making another player's job easier, you know? If you're in a situation, B.J. Armstrong, he's really effective shooting that three in that corner. Michael's going to make sure he continues to facilitate, attract a lot of attention, and make sure when he gives you the ball, you're in the proper space to do what you do and do best. And that's what I think in terms of guys we equate and say making a player better. No, he makes the guy's job easier. So those things that plays a strip. And I don't think any other player does that for their team, in terms of making their job better, but also making their job easier, but more importantly, affecting both sides of the court.
That's interesting, because I never thought of it that way. Like, would you say that playing with LeBron maybe made Kyrie a little bit better?
I think that in terms of with Kyrie and LeBron, I think that we look at it as LeBron is kind of tough to play with other superstars. I think you have to sort of refer to a adjusting a role on your team. He is excellent when you play with guys like Amon Shumpert, a J.R. Smith, role players, Kyle Korver. That's why I kind of like what they're going to do with the idea of having a guy like Isaiah Thomas and a Jeff Green. Guys that, you know, at the end of the day, they are just in a role. They don't need to really have the ball. And I think it was a very unique situation with Kyrie and LeBron, because let's be honest, Kyrie was a ball handler and he is a point guard. But the offense rolls through, you know, LeBron James. And I don't agree with all this notion that, oh, you know, we saw Kyrie when LeBron sat down, Kyrie Irving couldn't do anything and all this other stuff. Well, how could you expect to do something when the team wasn't built to your strengths? It's built to LeBron James' strength. That is LeBron James' team.
Jura, let me ask you a quick question here. Looking at, you know, since we're talking about Kyrie, the Boston Celtics, they've made a lot of changes from a year ago. This was a team that got to the Eastern Conference Finals. Well documented, Isaiah Thomas, the year he had last year offensively, coaching staff, and what they've done. What's realistic? And what do you expect this year from this Boston Celtics team and franchise?
Based on what they have and maybe the expectations. See, one thing that people have to understand is that the expectations as fans we may have, it might not be the team's expectations. You know, their expectation, obviously, is perhaps to look, try to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think if you look at the direction of that organization and the job that Danny Ainge has done, is really position the Boston Celtics as the Cleveland Cavaliers descend, they're in a position to continue to ascend. So they're not that far from that. And if they're able to be in a situation to attract a guy like a DeMarcus Cousins, maybe with one of those, still with one of those unprotected picks, that you can be able to say, okay, now we have the pieces, as obviously LeBron, if he decides to leave Cleveland, he's not going to be playing that much longer. But the thing about it is position themselves to be the next team that steps up to the plate.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about the process there in Philadelphia and teams tanking. It's getting a lot of media play. Adam Silver came out talking about lottery reform. From your perspective, from the fans' perspective, what do you feel about this and what's your thoughts?
I think it's great. I think that, you know, one thing you can say about Adam Silver is that he's done an unbelievable job from what a guy like David Stern had put in place and taken the league from one level to the next level and bringing it to a point now that, listen, there's some loopholes there. There are teams tanking. And I think that it was a utter joke in terms of what Sam Hinkie did with the Philadelphia 76ers. And yes, it looks great now, but overall, the overall product was not a good one. And with the NBA, in terms of putting these things in place, it will help the overall game. Because right now, I don't think that you can honestly say that there's probably four teams or five teams that you could say comfortably you'll sit down and be willing to watch from beginning to end. I don't think that's the case at all. So there's things like this that needs to be in place, because you don't want to be in a situation where you obviously find other teams following suit in order to say, well, look, the Sixers did this, so now we can go ahead and do it. And possibly this is the blueprint to sort of offset a lot of these guys, you know, forming so-called super teams and stuff and still be able to be a relevant franchise.
Well, there you have it. Gerald Brown, Bottom Line Sports.
I want to talk about the Yankees, man. I want to talk about some football. I want to talk about football, man. Wait, come on, PJ. Come on, I want to talk football, man. I want to
football
do my thing right now.
Well, let's go football. Where you want to go with this?
You know, I don't go too many places, and I don't really like to tell.
I'm a Lions fan, so I'm going to say this right now.
You're not a Detroit fan, man. If you don't have this, brother. You know what? You're not a fan. All right? This is what fans do. This is what fans do. Fans do.
Hey, what y'all gonna do this year? Y'all ain't gonna do nothing this year. What y'all gonna do?
We're gonna do a lot of exciting things to go in and get W's. You see, you didn't think I had that. That wasn't a prop. That's right there with me. It stayed by my side. It stays there to remind people we got one of these Super Bowls. The Lions don't have a 100-yard rusher. You better try to figure out if you can come back and help the Lions run the ball. Matthew pass the ball 50, 60 times. You better get a running back that can be able to have an offensive line and at least have 1,000 yards for the season. And Jameis, we trust.
And there you have it, Gerald Brown. My man. Appreciate you. Thanks for coming on. We will be circling back with you very soon.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, guys. I hope you're enjoying this bonus episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast. This is the producer, Shane Freeman. You guys hear me from time to time throughout the various episodes of the BJ and Bucher podcast. But on this bonus episode, I also wanted to share with you some other bonus material that you haven't had an opportunity to hear on the show. This particular bonus material is from episode 46, where Rick Bucher interviewed John Collins, Atlanta Hawks rookie, about his life as a military brat and how he kind of traveled the world and got a chance to see all these different things and how that helped shape his worldview, but more importantly, how it helped him adjust from the college game to the NBA, as well as how it's helping him adjust to the NBA lifestyle, because we all know you go from broke to very wealthy as an NBA rookie, and they have to make these adjustments because they go from $0 to millions of dollars. And so they have to learn how to make those adjustments. And so in this particular bonus clip of that interview, because they didn't make the cut due to time constraints from episode 46. So I just kind of wanted to share with you this particular bonus clip of that interview with John Collins, Atlanta Hawks rookie, and Rick Bucher. And I hope you guys enjoy it. And we'll be back right after the interview. So I hope you enjoy it.
So when you're sharing childhood experiences, if you got buddies, or you got a friend, or you guys are talking about how you grew up, I think about some of the things that you experienced early on, being in Guam, being in Turkey. I'm actually, my first language was German. I'm first generation American. My parents took me over there when I was just learning to speak. And so I still have nicknames for people around my old neighborhood that are German nicknames. And some of the things that I experienced were completely different as a result of that. And I have different touchstones. I wonder what if you have the same and what those are.
Yeah, it's always funny when I have those conversations with, my teammates or whoever, really, because they spend most of their life, usually, you know, not to say it in any way, but, you know, most people spend most of their life in a stationary place. And for me, it was kind of weird because every time, you know, they were talking about when they were three or four, I was in a different place. You know, I'll say like 3 to 4 years, I was in a different area. So It was always kind of weird, kind of relating to people. And, you know, I don't really truly have a lifelong friend that I can say I've been friends with this guy or this girl, whoever, since I was a small child, because I was gone, you know. So it definitely helped me out in that social aspect where, as a younger kid, I was so shy because I was moving schools a lot and, you know, I couldn't really socialize. You know, I didn't really have a group or a set of people that I communicated with on a regular basis. So I think that helped me out a lot in the social aspect, for me being able to just go out and talk and be a social butterfly. I think that opened up a lot of doors for me. And I mean to use that with my platform that I have right now while I'm using my time correctly in the NBA. So, like I said, man, the military and what mom has been able to do for me is giving me a lot of chances, and it's going to open a lot of doors down in the future.
Now, is there anything you experienced? I don't know if it's food, a toy, a game, something that you experienced overseas that is unique, that you still remember, that is different than anything that a typical U.S. kid would experience?
Yeah, I think for me, is when I was in Turkey and, you know, living on base is a totally different lifestyle than, you know, actually being in in true, that true Turkish culture. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, whenever we did go outside the walls of the base and I saw, you know, how, I don't even know what the word is, how robust and how, like, you know, action-packed it is. Like, most cities or metropolitan areas over in that side of the world, at least, feel like New York City. Mm-hmm. You rarely get that country, that aspect that you get with America, where you get that city life in one area and that country feel. It's more of like a super fast-paced type of lifestyle. Faster than, you know, I was really even old enough to understand at such a young age. But now I look back at it, I go to places like New York and stuff, and it's just a totally different atmosphere just being out in public than in America. It's hard to explain. It's more something you got to go over and experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. I don't want to stretch this point, but I wonder if your performance, and maybe I'm trying too hard to connect dots, or I'm trying to infer something, but Summer League is a mixed bag. It is, you're learning on the fly, you're learning new teammates, it's new competition, it's a swamp of countless variables. And I just wonder
No, I said, yeah, that sounds about right.
And I just wonder if your experience, you know, growing up and having to adjust on the fly, whether that played any part in your ability to come into that chaotic situation and immediately find some order and find your game and be able to excel.
No, it definitely does. And that's one of the things I pride myself on. I don't really like to open up that deep, but you hit it right on the nail there. And I think for me, that's huge. Like, I'm very good at adapting to certain situations. Just, you know, I think for me and myself, when I look at situations, I'm very good at adapting when you just throw me in the fire. I think I can handle a lot more stuff. It's kind of weird. I almost think it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable because I'm just so used to that chaotic atmosphere most of the time. So for me, like you said, I kind of get a little, not bored, but it kind of gets a little monotonous for me once I kind of get used to something and used to a schedule. And then on the other hand, my whole life has been on structure and on schedule because, you know, that's how the military is. So for me, like you said, the more chaotic, the better. I kind of feel a little bit more calm, especially on the court, because, you know, I can use my athleticism to my advantage when, you know, it just starts, you know, to become a game of up and downs and that type of thing. So, yeah, I think you hit it right on the nail there.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that bonus piece of the interview with Atlanta Hawks rookie John Collins. Rick did a great job with that interview. I think it was a really good questions, and I hope you guys enjoyed that. I also want to thank our special guest, Mr. Gerald Brown, for joining BJ and I on this episode, this bonus episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast. Gerald Brown is the host of the Bottom Line Sports Show on SiriusXM, so make sure you guys check that out on SiriusXM's NBA channel. And we also want to thank you guys for listening to every episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast, because without you, there'd be no reason for us to be doing this. We do have a special guest on episode 47 that you don't want to miss, and his name is none other than the myth, the man, the legend, Mr. Byron Scott. So make sure you don't miss that episode 47 of the BJ and Bucher podcast. And we want to thank you again for listening to the show. Make sure you stop by bjandbucher.com to check out some of the latest articles and videos and things that we post on the website. And I also want to encourage you guys to make sure you follow the BJ and Bucher show on Twitter and Instagram at BJ and Bucher. Please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes as well. Thank you for listening to the show, and we'll see you in episode 47.